Hey, it's Marlin Anderson, and this is episode 2 of Superpower State of Mind. Thanks so much for listening. Today, I have the total pleasure of speaking to a former advertising high flyer and the queen of truthfulness about parenting on her website and own podcast. It's Clemmy Telford. Clemmy and I get into sobriety, intrusive thoughts, and how she combats them. Plus, despite all her achievements and successes, you still need to have goals, right? And she lets us in on what hers are after turning 40. Please do follow or subscribe from where you get your podcasts so you don't miss my chats with the likes of Clemmy and more.
Hey, Clemmy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Actually, no, I'm quite fraught, to be honest. It's obviously summer holidays, and I move house 4 weeks today, and I'm moving into a house which we're renovating, which is still very much a building site. And, you know, just like I've got so much to think about that I then start doing really unnecessary things that I don't need to do rather than any one of the things that are really important.
Yeah. But what would you say about juggling work and being a mum? Because obviously you've done it, you're doing it, and I'm so new to it. And I think I started working when she was a month old. I had a shoot, and it kind of, it's so weird because you get this mum guilt. I just seem to get it really badly with her. It's like you're in this little world of being a mum, and then it's like, oh, I'm working. So, and I find it hard to integrate the two.
I think the mum guilt never goes. It really doesn't. But you get better at learning to ignore it and rationalise it. Look, we've got to pay the bills.
Yeah, 100%.
That is it. Yeah. And, you know, my eldest is 9 and now actually, so my husband isn't here. He's gone to his mum's. It's still at home because I'm working, and they're like, "Oh, mummy, why aren't you doing it?" And I can now have the conversation with them.
Yeah.
I've got to do it. And, you know, that is the way it is. That life revolves around work. What I try and do, and I fail at this, is try and be better at when I am mothering to mother and when I'm working to work. Because
so you're
I
separate.
Think when you blur all the boundaries, you're trying to send an email and you're kind of ignoring them, then you aren't doing either of them very well, and you feel shit.
Yeah, so true.
But it's not easy, and don't be under the illusion that any one of us are nailing it, even many years down the line. It's bad, but I always think if you're feeling mum guilt, that means you're probably not doing a bad job. That means you're wanting to be a great mum. So,
oh, thank you. No, she's with her dad today. So anyway, so I have a look at your Instagram, and you pop up regularly on the main feed, and you speak a lot about different topics, so things that we all need to hear about and things that we don't hear about that, you know, should have, like, awareness on. And one of them spoke loudly to me, and it's actually in my book, and it's about intrusive thoughts. And I don't really know anyone that gets them or whatever, and it started when I was pregnant with my first child, who I sadly lost, and it consumed my brain so much where I thought I was actually, like, I was sick in the head, like, what's going on, like, and I didn't know what to do with it. And they were the most, I don't even want to repeat the thoughts because, you know, like, I was like, what is going on? And I remember buying this book, How to Deal with Intrusive Thoughts, on Amazon or something, and it kind of made things clear a little bit, but I never fully understood where they came from, and I kind of learned that it was a bit to do with OCD. And I wanted you to explain it a bit more on your journey with intrusive thoughts.
So first of all, to flag, I am by no means an expert, although I have had experts write for my blog and work with me on this. First of all, I think actually, as you say, I've been talking about it recently, what I have seen is that more people suffer with this than you could ever imagine, you know, and I think especially in acutely stressful periods of our time, which particularly early motherhood is. And I remember it so well. I remember standing at the top of the stairs with my tiny newborn and thinking I could chuck that down the stairs, like, and it was like, oh my god, I can't believe that has crossed my mind. And it's kind of a remarkable human thing that we can be repulsed by our own thoughts like that. But it is just your brain at its kind of most exhausted and playing games with itself. It has no reflection on you and that you might do it. And then in fact, the fact that we feel so awful about it shows that it is no more than that. But what I find across all like mental health things, and for me, my kind of real struggle is with anxiety, is these things tend to spiral and layer up on itself. So, you know, I'd start having an anxious thought, and then I'm so worried about feeling anxious that I make myself more anxious, yeah. And then I'm putting coping strategies in. And it's the same thing with the intrusive thoughts. I find that if you just go, oh, well, that was a bit interesting, weird thing to think, probably I'm a bit tired, probably I need to try and recuperate, that's fine. But what you start to second guess it, and then it becomes a problem. But across all the work that I do, I just try and want people to know that you're it's not strange, because I think that's the absolute worst thing you can do, is add this kind of weirdo narrative on top of something which is already not very nice.
The worst thing about it is you start to question it, like, am I really thinking this for? Is it because it's real? And then you're like, no. So you have to really understand and separate the both. And what is the underlying cause of that reasoning? As you say, it's when your brain reaches this like maximum capacity of, I need to slow down, I need to kind of recoup and understand that there's a lot going on in my life at the minute. What were your coping strategies with the intrusive thoughts? What helped you the most?
I think, again, it's the normalising it. And I think, again, in early motherhood, if I look back now, what I wish I'd known is to try and stop. And I said, you know, we are all wrangling our jobs and our lives, but I didn't do enough of sitting on my ass and just doing, you know, do the bits you've got to do, but know that just looking after a baby is enough. And I think, always think of our mother's generation, though technology really saves us with connection, it also means you're stimulating your brain all the time. You're never just sitting there feeding a baby, you're also doing something else, and it's just too much, I think.
Yeah, like, I think it was the other day, I was like, I vape sometimes, and I was like, I'm just reaching for different things here. I've even got my phone in my hand, something else in my hand, or, oh, let's turn the TV on. And Netflix is on, but I'm trying to read a book on being fucking sober. And I'm like, what am I trying to do? And that's the next thing I wanted to speak to you about.
Yeah.
Your sobriety journey. Yeah, this is something that I have been dealing with pretty much since I was a teen. My dad was an alcoholic and stopped drinking at 25. He passed away of skin cancer when I was only a little girl. So I don't really remember much about him or his journey, but I don't really understand if it's genetic or not. I don't really get where it comes from. But I know that with me, it's due to so much trauma in my life. I will turn to drink when I feel alone or trying to avoid how I really feel and my emotions. So at the weekend, when her dad has our little girl, I will feel alone and not know what to do with myself. So I'll be like, oh, I'm going to go out with the girls and have a wine. But I don't have a cutoff point. I will have one or two and then be like, oh, I'm just going to get wasted. And it's the next day where I feel like absolute shite. And I feel so crap, depressed, and all these heavy feelings that I tried to bury the night before with this drink will resurface. And it's crazy because we're always on a healing journey, and I thought I was healed. And I was like, no, bitch, you're not. You're still on this journey.
Oh, we're doing this now.
Yeah. And I know that this is the one thing that sets me back. And I have to do it. So I've taken everything. I've thrown all my wine glasses away. I've read loads of books. I'm on these apps at the minute. And something just came over me this weekend gone. And I thought, I never want to feel like this again, ever. So where did it start with you?
It's really interesting. I'm now 3 and a bit years down the line with this, which I actually just can't believe. And I struggle to like articulate it because I can't exactly pinpoint. You know, I always say that I thought my drinking was pretty normalised, and then I look and think, well, are we generationally all getting it wrong? You know, we know how we were all raised to drink, or a lot of my friends. We were joking the other day about like drinking mixed spirits and it just like downing them, and then going to uni and drinking to blackout point quite regularly, which now as a sober person I find unbelievable. And my career was in advertising before this part of it, and so it was very much booze in every situation, and so it never felt strange. But if I look back, it was pretty dysfunctional drinking, and the problem is, if you turn to that, well, number one, I'd never really known how to socialise beyond kind of kid socialising. As an adult, I never knew how to socialise without alcohol. All through my life, it was the norm just to drink through any kind of issue. You've had a great thing happen, have a drink. You've had a terrible thing, have a drink. So again, you don't know any different. And did I have a drinking problem? Probably. But it's, I think if I do, then more people do.
It's a label, right?
Yeah.
And being called an alcoholic is a label. And I think, as you just said, it's a generational thing. So by me getting absolutely blasted on the weekends isn't actually that normal. But I think so many people are doing it where it becomes normal and you think, oh, actually, no, I'm fine. But being fine isn't waking up feeling like crap and then being guilty about it and having this repetitive cycle, which just puts me in a worse position. Like, and I just lose that 3 days because my hangovers aren't a day. They're like three now.
Well, this is it. It's a bit like, well, I would say that for me, drinking became like an emotional equivalent of Spanx. You like, you put them on and it's all got to come out somewhere. It has. And so Friday night, you're feeling a bit shit, a bit lonely, or a bit like, again, tied up with the motherhood thing. You don't feel like yourself, and tragically, maybe after a gin, I felt a bit more like myself, and maybe my husband and I felt a bit like myself. But whatever you felt at the point when you poured that gin, for me, when I woke up the next morning, it had multiplied.
Yeah.
And as I say, anxiety is definitely kind of not my weakness, but the thing that I suffer with. And it just got to the point that even a very small amount of alcohol was throwing my mental health off so badly. I just was like, I can't wake up in the morning and hate myself in the way that I do. Yeah. Like, what kind of grounding is that, like, on a weekly basis to absolutely loathe yourself and feel so shameful?
When you put it into perspective like that, it's crazy. Yet we keep doing it. And it's some weird little cycle that just keeps on going and going and going until one day you decide to have enough. And when was that day for you where you just, like, I can't do it?
Well, the thing is, I'd had three kids, so I'd had moments of being, you know, sober, although I did have a couple of drinks while I was pregnant. And then after my third, I was like, oh, great, this is it, I'm back. And I thought that was going to be a great thing, you know, back to that freedom. And so, I was going out and I was drinking. And one fateful day, I met a load of friends and we were drinking at lunchtime. And by kind of 9 p.m., the self-loathing had kicked in for me while we were still out. I went home. They all went out actually on a massive, massive night. And the next day we're like texting and laughing about it. I was like, they've gone on this massive night and they can rationalise it in their brains. I just can't. I hate myself now. I was like, I'm out. But my out was that I thought I was going to give myself a month on this and see what happened. But I can't. When I heard you talking about like getting rid of the wine glass or all this, the important thing that I want to tell everyone: sobriety is the greatest gift that has happened to me. I know it's abstinence. It has given me so much. And in terms of healing, you've got nowhere to hide anymore. But quite quickly, my sleep was better. My eating habits, because again, when I work out regularly, I try and look after myself. And then on a Saturday, I'd eat rubbish. I wouldn't exercise. I'd have a bad night's sleep. And so kind of 6 days of self-care goes out the window and you're like resetting. Whereas to wake up on a Sunday morning and go, all right, I feel great, or I feel normal, and now I'm going to be a better parent. And you do that over and over. And in the end, just like, oh, this liquid in a glass was just causing me so much trouble.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Our mind is like our homes or our car. So if you think about it, we need to take care of it. What goes on in our heads impacts how we deal with everything in our lives. So like anything, it needs some TLC and looking after. I know that when I go to therapy, it helps unload loads of information that goes on in my mind. And instead, by speaking about it and not suppressing my thoughts and feelings, I feel so much better after talking. There are loads of ways you can help your mind. Exercise, reading, journaling, and there is also BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp online therapy is more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. BetterHelp offer video, phone, or even live chat only sessions. If you want to simply hear someone's voice and not see their face, there is absolutely no pressure to turn your camera on. Listeners to Superpower State of Mind get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Marlin. That's betterhelp.com/Marlin. So for 10% off your first month of BetterHelp online therapy, go to betterhelp.com/Marlin.
And as you just said, sobriety is a gift to you. And I know that when I was pregnant and literally during the weeks, and I've done like a month and or two here and there, where I have new hobbies and I start to see life differently, and then the drink just brings it back again. And what I decided to do was get a bowl, create little different things I could do. So, I don't know, bird watching. I want to go freshwater swimming, paddle boarding or whatever. And I put them all in a bowl and I'll just take one out on the weekend and just do something different. But I think what it is for me is I think I'll start living once alcohol stops, like in terms of seeing how much more out there there is.
Your time just opens up, because I always joke, but I'm into fitness and I've got a group of friends who are too now. Funnily enough, you end up attracting people who like the same stuff as you. But it's like we regularly meet at like 7:38 on a Saturday morning, which sounds really bloody smug, but it's like I'm not hungover. I can go and do that, work out, have a coffee, have some breakfast and still be back to be with my kids like by a decent time. And I feel like that window just opened up to me. But the thing is, because this is interesting, everyone's like, oh, will you drink again? Possibly I could have a drink, but I just don't want any of that in my life anymore. I really don't. And then you think, oh, you're going to miss out. In time, I've been to weddings, I've been to festivals, I've been out with my mates. I'm still there. I just have my wits about me.
Yeah, exactly. And you're actually taking it all in instead of it being like, oh, a blur. Speaking of exercise, it's funny you said that, because I started to get back into my fitness after giving birth. I had a C-section, so I had to wait a while, and it saved my mental health completely. So we both advocate for body image, right? And I see what you do, and it's amazing. And I think one thing that they can get a little bit twisted with body positivity is, you know, just love yourself the way it is, and that's fine. But when you delve into it a little bit deeper, your mindset is like the greatest thing. So when my mind is stimulated, I love myself even more than just loving my external appearance. And when I started exercising, I just felt alive again, and the dopamine just came in, and you just want to do more, and it just makes you feel good. So it's less about how you look like and it's more about how you feel. And I'm so glad that you spoke about it, because I think not a lot of people understand that. They go, oh, exercise, no, I'm happy with the way I am. But there's actually more to it than just external image, right?
Oh my word. I mean, yeah, again, I didn't foresee myself in my days of being a party girl. I didn't foresee myself being a fitness person. But again, it's like I have a very, very, I turned 40 this year and I have a very, very clear sense that this is the body that I've got to look after for the rest of my life. And yeah, you know, once you hit this milestone, you don't take your kind of mortality for granted anymore. And so I think people can tie exercise up with trying to get into a smaller jean size, which I'm so far away from now. But exercise is keeping your body functioning. And in terms of, yeah, the dopamine hit, there's nothing like it. There really isn't. And I also have talked about online, I think body positivity can do you a disservice, where it can make you feel like you're cheating if you want to make your body be better. And I don't want to be a size that is appealing to anyone else, but I feel better when I've got muscle tone and when I feel good in my body.
Yeah,
I feel stronger.
It's a strange one, because obviously there's so much going around on social media, and there's also toxicity involved in it, and how, you know, women look a certain way. And I haven't always loved myself or where I am now with my body. I struggled with eating disorder for years and years from a teenager. Has your journey always been pretty similar, or have you always been in a good place, or not really?
No, I've been, again, I feel like I hate just speaking in sweeping statements, but it's generational. You know, absolutely new to get in shape for holidays, I mean, my life goal for most of my life was to be smaller. It really was. And again, having moved away from that, and I'm not, with all of these things, you're not kind of, oh, my body image is sorted. Oh, I'm sober. I know full well this comes in cycles, you know? I have to catch myself when I have that narrative, because usually for me, when I get stressed, my default now isn't to drink anymore, but it is to diet. It is.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I completely hear you.
I'll be happier when this happened. Yeah. Well, you know, when I'm this... and I mean... Now I know, and I, as I say, I'm on my nutrition and I exercise. Those sizes I was aiming for all of my life, I could have never eaten again, and I wouldn't have been down to them. And it's like, what a absolute waste of time.
But where do you think this started with the need to look a certain way? Like, what was your childhood like growing up? Because I understand so clearly to me, it was my mum restricting junk food in the house and fucking hiding it in washing machines and stuff and being like, be healthy, be healthy. So I used to go to my best friend's house, binge on all her junk food, and I'd feel so much guilt. But I was only a kid, so that instilled into my mind when I was a little child.
I mean, my mum, yeah, I'm always a bit wary of this. My mum has different views on it, but I feel like she wanted to... I feel like, yeah... whatever, it was desirable to be small from, yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, across absolutely everything. Yeah. But even now I have to watch myself. If I'm in a family environment, as in my extended family, I almost always end up feeling shit about my body. And I can now see my appetite is bigger than perhaps other people in my family. And I know that's right because I know what I do with my body, so I need to fuel it. But I have to really lean into the fact that, oh no, that portion of pasta you've served yourself, can you give me the same as the boys, please? And yeah, and that makes you feel awful. It does. Yeah, it's a really complicated journey. And I think so many of us have fallen victim to it. It's an absolute tragedy, isn't it?
Do you feel like it's something you're going to have to deal with for the rest of your life? Or do you think that by exercising and trying to eat like well for your body and healthy, do you think that's going to help change some certain things around in your mind? Because that changed a lot for me when I stopped dieting and restricting and understood that I can eat whatever I want, but I'd rather fuel my body with avocado, halloumi, salads, chicken, salmon, protein, and eat whatever and how much I want, but the right thing. I think I started to change a little bit around it.
Actually, for the first time ever, I am working with a nutritionist now because I'm into powerlifting and I'm trying to...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Jeez, go on, Miguel.
I'm trying to gain strength... And sitting, it's been very interesting. So in powerlifting, you sit in different weight categories. And I'd stopped weighing myself for about 3 years as part of a kind of journey to healing. But then I needed to know what I weighed in order to know where I sit. Yeah. And actually, for the first time ever, I can look at that number in such a functional way. And I can see what calories I'm putting in and just see that it is just a fueling. It's just maths. And I was just like, oh. If only I'd understood this. And I spent a lot of time restricting. And now I know if you're eating the right food, you can eat a ton of great stuff. And yeah, I of course eat brownies, but and I try and educate my kids to this. If I eat a brownie every day, by the end of the week, I don't feel very good. I don't. And that's not because of how it looks. My body just doesn't like having that much sugar.
Yeah.
So I don't give myself the carte blanche to eat whatever I like, whenever I like, because for me, often I'm eating emotionally as well. But yeah, I mean, what a waste of time not eating delicious things. I remember...
I know, it's like catch 22 when you say
Yeah,
that.
But I went on this trip to Devon and we did this massive walk with another family and we got to the pub and I was still in peak restrictor mode and everyone else had fish and chips and I had a salad. And it was a pub where the salads were shit and the fish and chips were amazing. It's like, what are you doing? And again, if you fancy a salad and that's what you want, but that wasn't why I was doing it. I was denying myself.
Have you heard of intuitive eating? I did try that. And I don't think my body releases the right signals as everybody else is when you tune in. And I think that requires a little bit more being present, mindful, a bit more meditation and just really being in tune. But when you say you're denying yourself, it is so true. And then I look at life like, shit, life is so short. My mum died again. like really, like, you know, she ate healthy her whole life, then she's died of stomach cancer. What a contradictory thing. My dad died of skin cancer. My little girl died before she was a month old. And I think, fuck it, you know, you only live once. And then, but then I'm like, but I want to take care of my body and be healthy. So
yeah, and make it live for as long as possible. It's really difficult.
So I'm like, yo, what am I meant to be doing it?
I just have to, I think with eating, again, with this emotional thing, I have to, I'm wary of, emotional eating. It's the same thing. It's the same as booze. It's the same as scrolling. Yeah. It's all okay, but you just have to just check with yourself. I know it. I've got a drawer at home with all our snacks in, and sometimes I am literally don't even know that I'm doing it, and I'm there, and I'm shoving stuff in my face. And there's a time and a place for it, but it's just trying to, just trying to be a bit more self-aware.
With the emotional eating, have you figured out, like, a link with it? Of the, like, why, what is the root behind it? Because I know that when I was emotionally eating, it's just like the alcohol thing again. I was doing it because it's numbing something. So have you had therapy? Have you had different kind of ways?
I've done all kinds of different therapy. Yeah, it is numbing. But actually, I checked something in myself last week. So my we're moving house, and my kid left school last week, and my eldest was very, very upset. My husband rang and said, "Oh, can you come home? Because he's really upset." And on the journey back, I was like, "Oh, what we'll do is we'll go out for dinner." And then I was just like, "No, what are you doing? You are literally taking these hard emotions that he's feeling, and although it's trying to do something nice, but." It was my reflex distract. Oh, here's something delicious. Don't feel your feelings. And instead, I was like, went home. You're feeling hard things. This is hard. This is hard. And let's not distract from it. And then, you know, tomorrow we can go out and celebrate the end of term, but don't blur those two boundaries. And I think that is what it is. It's like trying to distract.
But that's amazing of you recognising that, because that's where generational trauma kicks in. And what my mum inflicted on me, like, you pass it down, and I look at my little girl and I'm like, I'm so chubby, I love it. And then I'm like, yo, I need to stop saying that, because she's going to be like, one day, look at me, be like, why are you calling me that? But I love it, you know?
Yeah, you have to check. But I mean, my daughter was the kind of the real crux for me. So I've got two boys and then a girl, and all of them were quite chunky. And I was fine when people were referring to my boys as chunky. And then as soon as they did it to her, I felt something go in me. I was like, okay, you've got to check this. But also, I mean, we can say what we like, but it's amazing how much people do comment on bodies. And I was with the chunky baby thing. It's like, oh, you're so cute, you're so chunky. And then when does that suddenly switch? When do people suddenly think, actually, it's no longer cute that you look like that?
Exactly. And I posted a photo, right, of my little girl next to me, my thigh and her thigh. She had the exact same dimples as me. And they were like, oh, so cute. But they were just referring to her, not me. And you think, when is that cutoff point? And as you said, it's just society, social media, and everything that we get put in, like everything that gets put in front of us on a day-to-day basis. But it's up to us to be able to filter it out, right? And people like you with your page and what we can just go to and check in on ourselves and read information and topics that nobody talks about, you're an inspiration and we need more of it. And it's not, I don't think there's enough of it, actually. And when I saw your intrusive thoughts thing, I was like, I don't see that often, shit. Like, but it's so brave of you to talk about that stuff that no one does. What kind of spurred you on to create this, well, I don't even know what it is, this world that you're doing, and with your blog and your book, this kind of, what made you start it all?
Just to save myself, really, to be honest. That's all it's ever been.
It's like therapy.
It is. And then you're like, oh, it's nice to hear that someone thinks it's inspirational, because I wonder whether it's tedious. She's like, oh, here she goes. She's obsessed with something else for a bit. But that's what a healing journey is, isn't it? Yeah. It's like, you know, for a while, all I could think about was sobriety, and then it kind of sits, just becomes a habit that sits in your life. But and especially if you've got kind of a bit of an addictive personality traits,
I have the most addictive personality. It's ridiculous. I started vaping and then I ended up buying 20 different flavors. And then I'm like, what am I doing?
And it just moves to the next thing. You're like, oh god, I'm doing really well, really well. 6 months down the line, you're like, oh no, that thing that you thought was an innocent, nice thing that you were doing is escalated into an obsession.
I found out I've got ADHD, actually. I got diagnosed a month ago. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like when I'm actually like recording the podcast, so I have to fiddle. I'm like, darn it. I'm thinking my mind sometimes elsewhere. And it's even like with my reactions and triggers, and ADHD has actually brought up a lot to my attention of why my brain is like this. And that mm-hmm. is why alcohol does not mix with someone like me. It just doesn't, just won't.
No, I mean, I really, it's difficult. I don't want to ever push it on anyone, but just really lean into it. You'll be, it can be amazing. It is amazing. That is why, like, once you get, stop drinking and you meet other people who don't drink, you're like, it feels like we've been given the keys to the universe and everyone else is distracted. It really does.
What does your day-to-day look like for someone that needs a bit of inspo in their life and they're like, right, what does Clemmie get up to? What does she do for her own mental health? Does she have anything that she puts into her day-to-day basis?
You know what? The jokes is, I think, the closer to healing or on a healing journey, a bit obvious, your life becomes more and more boring, which is everything that I would have absolutely thought I would have hated. You know, I get up every morning at 6, I go to the gym every day except for Sundays, I prep my food, I go to bed by 10, I try and drink water, I try and not drink coffee after 3 o'clock. It is so boring.
Sounds like me. That's actually what I'm like.
I'm just like, straight edge life is the one. I'm just so straight edge these days. But
do you journal at all?
No, but I feel like, no, and I should, but I feel like a lot of the work that I do is quite a lot of thought processing. But yeah, I probably should do that, add that into another obsession.
Yeah, no, but I'll journal, get like 2 new diaries and be like, yeah, journal for like a week straight. And then I'll be like, oh, no, next board. And like that. And I have to kind of put myself into doing something else, like get into yoga for a week as well, and then it'll be something.
It's trying to make sustained habits, isn't it? That
yeah, and I think with ADHD, I'll start writing and then I'll be like, my hand hurts, finished now. Like, you know, and it's hard for me to just stay focused sometimes, and I guess that's just takes time or having to tune in. Yeah, it's part of it.
I think an important part, I mean, I haven't got an ADHD diagnosis, but I mean, I understand what that means. For me, with powerlifting, we train in 3-week cycles and then we have a reload week. And I think this has been a really good journey for me, that not everything has to be at 110% all the time, because that is utterly unsustainable. And actually with the journaling, it's going, okay, well, I did a few days, and it's trying to nudge yourself to pick that pen back up again in due course. And to be honest, it's the same with all of it. You know, if you do have a drink, it's not going, okay, well, now I'm drinking again. It's like, oh, I had a drink, that's interesting, I'll go again. Oh, I sat and I stuffed granola in my face from the drawer without even realizing it. Right, that doesn't mean that all my healthy eating ambitions have gone out of the window, but you know, I think that's what I used to always be.
But how do you find the balance though? I don't really know how. I think I got there because I had enough. I was sick and tired of, well, yeah, just being all or nothing.
It's the same as I used to smoke. I mean, if
smoking, I used to smoke too.
Of course. If smoking wasn't bad for you, I bloody would still smoke. I love smoking. But the way I gave up smoking is I knew I wanted to give it up. So I like basically chain smoked for the last few days of smoking, to the point that it made me feel so sick. But, you know, with the sobriety, I had to have enough horrible hangovers to one day I was just like, can't do this for myself. And you have to be kind of ready within reason, you know.
But isn't it sad though that sometimes it might be too late, you know, when it comes to it, and we have to have something bad has to happen until we realize in our brains.
Yeah, my other point is, what I try and check in with more is really lead. So I'm very good at spiraling into the negative, but trying to really log the positive into my mind. So if I've been to the gym on the journey back, really, really talk to myself about how great I feel then. And on when I was first not drinking in the morning afterwards, and I felt great, just like really go, my God, I feel absolutely amazing. Smug, smug, smug. Because I think you've got to really hammer those positives into your brain as well.
Definitely. And we're just used to just looking out for the crap stuff, right? The negative. That's just how it is. And I think gratitude practicing is good. Like just being grateful and trying to feel that. Like when you just said you exercise, right, you feel euphoric. I don't know about you, but I'm like, right, I'm ready to go. And then I'm like, boom, take the day over. And then, but you have to just stop, take a snapshot in your mind and be like, how freaking good do you feel right now? And it's just so important.
Because isn't it wild that the brain is really quick to remember the joy of the bad habits? But, you know, even as someone who's into fitness, sometimes I go, I can't quite be arsed. And you're like, you absolutely love it. You love it. What are you on about? Go.
It's the getting there bit. Yeah. It's the putting on the gym clothes bit and getting there. And once you're doing it, everything's fine. But where do you see yourself going with your career? Well, what do you want to do next? Like, where what's your kind of goal with everything?
I'm trying to. This is really weird. I'm at a weird point in my life because I've finished having kids. I'm about to move into what will be hopefully a long-term home now. And I've just turned 40. I want to carry on with this work, and I'm trying to. I've got a lot of disconnected stuff, and I'm building websites to try and bring that all together. And then I think my long-term goal is I haven't really said this out loud on here, but is to open a gym and to I wasn't a sporty girl at school, and I just wish I had been, and I wish that I'd had the what fitness brings me all the way through my life. So.
Hear you on that. I love that. Amazing. And would it be powerlifting?
It would be all of it, but I think strength training, particularly for women, because again, for me, it's a massive move away from being on a cross trainer, like looking at the calories. Cardio. Cardio that I hated.
That's all I used to ever do. And then nothing would happen. My body would stay the same.
I hated it because you're sitting there, like the dialogue in my head was self-loathing, self-loathing, self-loathing. Now it's like I lift something heavy and I feel bloody amazing. And look, cardio can give you unbelievable highs. But yeah, the joy of being strong is so useful for every single part of your life. And it doesn't have to be an experience that you hate. Like, exercise can be a joyful.
Wow, what a woman Clemmy is. Do go and check out the website, The Mother of All Lists, as well as her podcast. Both are linked in the episode notes. I promise you will not regret giving up your time for them. Follow and subscribe to Superpower State of Mind from where you get your podcasts. Don't forget, if you've not already done so, you can listen to episode 1 with former Hollyoaks star Sarah Jane Dunn right now.